And she is, she has a PhD in epidemiology, just want to plug that, since it's talking about the intersection. And the other thing I'm going to tell you about at the end is an invitation for everyone to come to our epidemiology social, which will be tomorrow night, and I'll tell you how to get tickets for that. So at the end, we'll give you all that information. But she has a PhD in epidemiology from the University of Pittsburgh, and currently she's the Associate Dean for Student Affairs at the School of Public Health and Information Sciences at the University of Louisville. And one of the things that I'm impressed with her bio is that she has very many interests that span from lead to cancer to chronic diseases. And I think it's really interesting that there's also this toehold into infectious diseases.
I'm an epidemiological gadfly, I guess. Well, good afternoon. The first thing I'd like to say is that I don't have any relations to disclose, financial relationships to disclose. Secondly, I am not Haritha Palam. She was the main investigator on this project, and she was not able to come to APHA this year, so I'm presenting for her. And just to give a little bit of background and introduction, in terms of the epidemiology of hospital-acquired infections, the estimated number of HAIs, or hospital-acquired infections, each year in the U.S. hospitals is about 2 million per year, with an estimated about 100,000 mortality of 100,000, although that's probably a little bit low since the source for that was 2002 WHO. Acinetobacter species were first identified in 1911. It's associated with ventilator-associated pneumonias in 5 to 10%, with a mortality of 60%. Its association with bloodstream infections went up from 2002, when it was 17 to 25%, to 26 to 68% in 2008. When it's compared to the other multi-drug resistant gram-negative organisms, it accounts for a significant increase in morbidity and mortality. It lives or resides in water and soil, but Abomani also survives for prolonged periods of time, up to several days, on surfaces such as cell phones, keyboard pads, and hospital equipment, also skin. And these act as fomites in the spread of the organism. So this current outbreak investigation was conducted in a long-term acute care facility. The acronym for that is LTACS, a hospital in Louisville, Kentucky. And this facility specializes in the treatment of and rehab of medically complex and catastrophic patients who require extended stay in the hospital setting. So the idea is that these hospitals filled a niche that was created in the 1980s with the advent and implementation of DRGs, and it's they're subject to an alternative related set of codes for reimbursement. And so patients who are very sick in the ICU isn't an appropriate setting for long-term care for those with acute illness. It's not the goal of the culture there is to get the patients stabilized and get them out. It's not particularly pleasant for family members, but the patients are too sick certainly to go home. They're too sick to go to a nursing home, so they go to these LTACs. So we described multi-drug resistant infections as in vitro evidence or resistance to more than or equal to 3 antibiotics, and we defined extreme drug resistant Abomani as isolates resistant to all penicillins, cephalosporins, monobacterams, etc. We can see here the epidemiological curve that shows us the increased number of cases per 1,000 patient days, bed days, during the study period of June of 09 to October of 09. So the average number of cases per 1,000 patient bed days before the outbreak was 0.001, and then during the outbreak, the mean number was 0.003. So the current investigation was performed by following the CDC methodology for outbreak investigation. And our hypothesis was that increased antibiotic exposure of the patient would be associated with increased drug resistance. Causes of drug resistance, we've heard something about that, but they're numerous, but often linked to inappropriate empiric antimicrobial therapy. identified risk factors for development of multi-drug resistant or XDR, extreme drug resistant and pathogenous organisms include administration of subtherapeutic doses of antimicrobial agents, drug overuse, condensed or interrupted courses of treatment in drug overuse, antimicrobial resistance. It probably originated in resistant genes transferred from the bacterial species. So we wanted to determine whether an association existed between prior antibiotic exposure of the patient and increased drug resistance of Abamani. This slide is the result of an antibiotic susceptibility trend analysis conducted in patients cultured positive for Abamani during years 01 to 09. We can see that analysis presents a clear idea about the decreasing susceptibility to antibiotics over time. Our methodology included using QI Macros software to generate an epidemiological curve, and then we used chi-square tests or Fisher's exact test for categorical data and Mann-Whitney U-test for continuous data. This slide is a bit hard to read, but it does describe and orient the data in terms of person, time, and place. And we can see a high percentage, that is 70.2%, were defined as having the extreme drug-resistant form of Abamani. 80% of the patients were on central line catheters. 77% were on mechanical ventilation. This was a model that examines the evaluation of prior antibiotic exposure and increased resistance to Acinetobacter. And this model was developed by Dr. Julio Ramirez at the University of Louisville, and it's based on the respective antibiotics efficacy toward Abamani. So patients were just categorized based on their prior antibiotic use. So as a result, we found that the median of multi-drug resistant patients had a patient exposure score of 9.0, and those in extreme drug resistant patients a score of 9.1, and this was found to be not significant. So in conclusion, what we took from this is that documentation in the literature does support that extreme drug-resistant antibiotics has a significant capacity for long-term survival. I'm sorry, Abamani has a significant capacity for long-term survival in the hospital environment. Once it's introduced into an institution, regular interventions might not be efficacious in terms of controlling the organism, and it may in fact become endemic to the institution, which really highlights the need for personal hygiene all the more important. Also, after this, there was the implementation of control and prevention measures in the hospital. There was contact isolation, contact precautions, and mandatory in-services that took place on infection control practices for all of the clinical staff. Hand hygiene, the monitoring of that was stepped up at that time. Terminal cleaning of patients' rooms after each transfer was emphasized, and Clorox wipes were used for all non-patient specific equipment. These are the references. I'd like to acknowledge collaborators on this study, Dr. Ramirez, Tim Weimken, Paula D. Castelnuovo, Juanita Clay, Karen McCurley, Michelle Hall, and Julie Harding. And as this cartoon illustrates, with today's emerging infections, curtains are just not going to cut it. Thank you. Sorry, one more time.
Did you include cases that were positive for Acinetobacter that were just colonized or only infections?
The question was, did we include in our sample patients who were colonized and or infected or just infected? And the answer is just those who were infected.
Was there a concurrent increase in colonizations during that time period?
data that makes every curve showing the background rate of Acinetobacter and then the increase during the outbreak time? Was there also an increase in colonization during that time?
I believe there was, but I'm not entirely sure. Yes?
Quick question. I'm not sure if you mentioned this, I missed it, but I believe Acinetobacter is also a biofilm producing organism. I was wondering if you had done any work to differentiate between multidirect resistance and potential sites of biofilm production, such as different types of catheter or some more systemic or other infection.
I'm not going to repeat the question because if I could hear it, I think everybody could hear it, given my hearing. I think that data probably collected that, but I'm it wasn't examined at this time.
Harrison,
in the slide that you prepared that goes with multi-drug resistant Acinetobacter, extremely drug resistant Acinetobacter, they allowed us to score lines. How did that compare to the overall population of this
I think the question was, how did the rates of prior drug use, how did that apply to the rest of the hospital patient population? And again, I'm not sure I can give you Haritha's information, because I'm sure that data is available as well.
I'm going to take the moderator for to ask a couple questions along with this. I was interested in the scale, which is just sort of a single point scale, and there may be that certain antibiotics have a disproportionate effect in developing the development of multi-drug resistant Acinetobacter, whereas in here it was sort of each class got just 1 point above the previous classes, and it could be that maybe one antibiotic, instead of just being rated at a 5, should be rated at a 10, you know, something like that. So I'm interested in the development of the scale, and did you look to see if there were any particular antibiotics that were associated with this? I know, Patricia, you worked on the Elizabeth Pinii and the association with Holliston, where there we could really see one antibiotic was highly associated with acquisition of a sort of a rare disease. So I'm wondering if that was looked into at all.
You guys are killing me here. that scale was developed by Dr. Ramirez, and it certainly could have been a broader scale or one that had, or a different type of scale. I'm not sure of the rationale behind his development of that. And in this analysis, anyway, there wasn't one individual antibiotic that they looked at.
That's sort of a study where you think, oh,
certainly.
All right, if there are no more questions on that, I thank you very much.
Thank you.